KHOI, your city in Ames.
Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with Pat Schlerbaum, and Mike Murphy is engineering our program this morning. Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, will join us later in the hour to share her TuneIn Tuesday messages.
We start out the morning with partly cloudy skies becoming overcast in the afternoon as we reach a daytime high of 48 degrees. Northeast winds of 10 to 20 miles per hour will begin shifting to the south-southeast in the evening, a nighttime low of 42, and there is a chance of rain showers.
So get your slickers and those little rubber boots out, folks. We've going to have some rain again, perhaps. Pat, we've got some guests this morning. We have three. Dan Haug of Prairie Rivers of Iowa, along with City Engineer Tracy Peterson and Story County Watershed Coordinator Sarah Carmichael. They've all joined us to discuss water quality issues. Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you join us today. What's going on? We've got a set of events. You've got some things coming up, but we want to talk about the highlights of the water quality monitoring that's going on in Story County, and then you've got some events. So first, maybe we ought to talk about the monitoring program. Dan, do you want to start out with that?
Sure. You know, we've had just a great amount of effort. Volunteers with the Story County Conservation's volunteer program. We've had the City of Ames providing lab testing, so we've been covering 15 sites monthly around Story County. And then this last year, we've also been doing storm sampling to test pollutants in runoff. So just a lot of effort going on. And so we've had our, really first full season of monitoring data come out, and we put a report together about the findings of that. And so it's, just a lot going on.
Yeah. We hear the word watershed, or the phrase watersheds, and I was wondering, Sarah, since you are the watershed coordinator for the county, you could perhaps give our listeners a definition of what is a watershed, and are there differences between watersheds?
Yeah, absolutely. So what a watershed is basically an area of land where all of the underground water and the surface water, it all drains to a specific point, or whether that's a ditch, a stream, a creek, it all is draining to the same area. And so the boundaries of a watershed are really determined about the topography of the land. So what's happening in Ames isn't necessarily what's happening in Nevada, but as you zoom out of the county, it's all draining to the same area, and that's eventually ending up in the Mississippi. But as we zoom into the county, we have smaller watersheds, and they're called HUC-12s, Hydrologic Unit Code, and we have 32 HUC-12s in the county.
And are you in charge, or are you overseeing all of those, or is it a combination of individuals? How are those monitored?
Yeah, great question. So Story County kind of took a unique approach to looking at watershed management. Usually when you hear watershed coordinator, it's usually at the HUC 8 level. So it's a bit of a larger watershed, and that would be the South Skunk River. So that goes from Hamilton all the way south into a different county. But what Story County wanted to try to do is look at what we're doing locally as a county to identify not only the problems, but solutions. And so we are looking more at our HUC-12 level solutions to manage our watersheds.
Okay. Now, as far as managing, City of Ames sits at the intersection, if you will, of the Iowa and the Skunk, and that's kind of where Tracy comes in. Tracy, what can you tell us about your role with Ames and the two creeks that run through Ames proper?
Yeah, we like to say everybody lives in a watershed. And we really do have so many streams and aims, and those, you hit on those major ones. In 2007, we did our first stream assessment, and we recognized all of the erosion and degradation that we were having in our streams. And after the 2008 and 2010 floods, then we updated that in 2012. And it really does show, you know, everything that is coming towards Ames, but we're also creating some of the problems ourselves. So education is a huge part of bringing it to people's attention, but also the data-driven aspect is why we're so interested in the water quality data, as well as we had done a sanitary sewer system evaluation in 2012 that also shows where we have some leaking sewers, sanitary sewers. And one thing that a lot of people don't realize is the sanitary sewer goes to the wastewater treatment plant, but what goes down into the storm intake doesn't. It doesn't get treated. It just goes directly into the streams. And so whether it's trash or whether it's somebody thinks that they can dump paint down an intake and it'll go away, it doesn't. It goes into the environment.
Or worse.
Yeah,
go ahead, Dan.
And we had an interesting kind of demonstration of those connections this spring. I'd been out doing some water testing with a group of Ames High School students, and one of them sent me a photo of the creek. There's a little creek that starts with, a 60-inch storm sewer, and it goes below Ames High Prairie and then into Iowa Creek. And he sent me a photo of this. It had kind of turned an orangey-brown color and said, well, is this pollution? And what we discovered is that there had been hydrant flushing going on in my neighborhood, which is near Fellows School and in a lot of North Ames, and that it's just rust, rust in the pipes, so nothing to worry about. But that rusty water had gotten flushed out, gone down the storm sewers, and then directly into that little creek. And so that was what was causing it. And so, you know, there are a lot of newer neighborhoods in Ames where there are stormwater ponds that will slow down and treat the water. But in some of our older neighborhoods that predate those ordinances, we see that direct connection. And we've been monitoring water and seeing that there's a lot of high phosphorus and sediment and bacteria that can make their way to the street. So, you know, really kind of a light bulb moment of the connections that we have and the influence that we have in our neighborhoods.
Yeah, for our listeners, if they go to Prairie Rivers, you actually have a write-up on that, your description of that, along with some photographs that are included. That's a well-done description of what that was all about. Appreciate that.
Yeah, our website is prrcd.org.
Thank you. As far as you were talking about retention ponds within the city, and I know, Tracy, you've been involved in some of those. I know out in the rural areas, there were natural retention ponds, but now there are some activities going on to perhaps bring those back or create some that help slow that flow and trap some of those nutrients that Dan just alluded to. Sarah, can you describe that briefly for our listeners?
Sure. So... What's interesting, the Story County looked at not only what to do with watershed management, but they also wanted to identify how they can make a difference with like planning and development and environmental health. And so they those departments worked on creating different ordinances that the county can focus on, not necessarily the city, but what the county can do. And that involves management of stormwater. It impacts what's happening in the rural areas regarding agricultural runoff. So there's a really great connection between what's happening in the urban environment versus what's happening in the majority of the county.
One fun thing is that the city and the county have built this wonderful relationship where we're finding landowners in the county, and then financially we are partnering to install some wetlands that will improve water quality and also do some flood reduction as it flows into Ames. So it's really this collaborative effort has been a wonderful aspect and a great benefit to everybody in the county.
So what I'm hearing is, like rain, all these various factors are kind of, when you first look at it, it seems like there's no organization, but as the watershed creates and starts to flow down, you folks have created a system that is hopefully handling this, or at least making us aware so we can figure out how to handle these issues. The overall program, which is the nutrient reduction program that we're trying to take into effect, and then also the actual physical problems that flowing water creates, is maybe some folks don't realize this, but water is probably the most erosive power that we have on the surface of our area. I guess I'd like us all to talk a little bit about that. Dan, if you could talk about some of the programs that Prairie Rivers is involved in, and maybe how all three of you work together toward that.
Yeah, you know, I like to say that rivers don't stop at the city or county lines, and so it's really important to work together if we're going to address water quality or flooding or fish habitat or anything that relates to rivers. And, you know, you were saying about erosion, and I think there's, you know, we've seen a really good shift to how we manage rivers, that we're not just, you know, plopping down concrete, that we're thinking more about how do we shape the, do things that will reconnect rivers to their floodplain, how do we redirect the current away from those soft banks, how do we work with nature. Tracy, I think you have some projects going on with restoring Iowa Creek.
We do, and so there is that erosiveness. Water is so powerful, and what we've done as a state, they came up with the Iowa River Restoration Toolbox, and it was Department of Natural Resources and a lot of us recognizing that, okay, if we put riprap on the bank, it's just a Band-Aid. It wasn't fixing it. It was just basically armoring it so that the water could continue to pound at that bank and not erode as much, though it still would. And so now with this Iowa River Restoration Toolbox, it uses natural channel design, but it goes into an analysis really to recognize, okay, what is the problem? What is causing that erosion? What is happening to the energy of the stream? And how can you use, say, root wads or logs and some rock in placing it in certain ways to get the energy, that salwag, back into the middle of the stream, and so it's not eroding. And not to say that we're not going to have some events, extreme flood events, that are going to still erode, but dealing with the water that's in the stream, that's one means of how we've been restoring some of our streams in Ames. And we did this back in even 2010 on a stretch of College Creek just west of South Dakota, and it has held up very well. And that's smaller than Iowa Creek. So then you start looking at other means of how you can use these measures that are in the toolbox. And another way is then dealing with reduction of water and reduction of the velocity of the water as it's coming off the impervious area. So we have 92 acres that was flowing down directly into Iowa Creek just west of South Duff. And we installed a wetland there next to the Boys and Girls Club that takes that water. And so it actually holds, it can handle up to, say, a 3-inch storm. It's going to be managed within that and really slow that water as it's going into Iowa Creek instead of just being so erosive, uncontrolled, flowing into the creek. And so we're doing that ourselves as the city, but we are also work with developers so that the developers as they are coming in with a proposed parcel of land to divide, they pulled back the difference between that flow of a uncontrolled develop, and then they release it at a meadow in good condition, so that it, that's why they have all those big detention ponds. And so that's helping to prevent the erosion, helping to prevent the flows being so powerful and affecting other people.
And a lot of our, many folks don't realize this, but the floodplain for the Skunk and the Iowa Creek area is a larger floodplain than even the Des Moines River. If you drive Highway 30, you'll realize that if you drive from floodplain to floodplain, how wide, how expansive the one is here in the Ames area. A lot of folks don't realize that. And if my geology history serves me right, it was, these are the results of glacial meltwater areas originally. And so that's how our topography in this area was originally formed. It sounds like what you're trying to do, Tracy, Dan, and Sarah, is work with what is there to mitigate the velocity of the water that comes down and use some of those natural areas, like part of that floodplain just east of the Duff area. Is that right, Tracy?
It is. We basically reconnected. So the stream banks were 10 plus feet tall, very vertical. It was, as the bank full flows would come through there, it would take 10 feet at a time. I mean, it just very erosive through there because it was uncontrolled. It was unstabilized. And so what we've done is cut those banks down and reconnect to the floodplain so that there is more area where the water can spread out in that South Duff area. And then we also created pocket wetlands. So there's little depressions that people will see, and those will hold some of the water as well and treat it. So that whole area is going to be planted with native vegetation, which has a really deep root system that will hold the soil particles in place, and the plants will uptake some of those nutrients that Dan was talking about, and then it will just be a much more stable and resilient place where the water can flow.
Pat's got a question for you.
Yes, Sarah, I'm curious when you mentioned the tools in the toolbox. And also heard impervious water movement. Are developers necessarily required to have pervious surfaces in their parking areas, and or is that one tool that you were, that's in that toolbox?
Well, that might be. Was it Sarah or Tracy that brought that up? Either one of you can answer.
Well, I was, I'll speak for the county. So we don't have any specific requirements for construction in like a parking lot, like low impact developments, whether that's like bioswales or tree, you know, placements for trees. But it is something that I think maybe the city has that Tracy can speak on, but it is something that we are, you know, hoping to look at as a countywide level.
Well, Sarah, what about your oxbows? Because that's kind of, you know, using the original form of the river to benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so regarding, like, river restoration, I mean, the hard part is that rivers and anything you do with rivers, whether it's creating those pocket wetlands or restoring oxbows, it takes time. You know, it takes years from planning to actual on-the-ground inputs and then planting those native trees and plants. It just takes time to grow. So sometimes it's very hard to see the progress. And people are concerned, and that's rightfully so, but everything that we are doing to the streams to get them back to meandering or to restore them to or reconnect them to the floodplain. It's all benefiting that stream section, but also everybody downstream as well.
Okay, before
one thing,
go ahead, Tracy.
Well, we have two different aspects. So we have, okay, we've caused this problem as nature and humans have contributed to it. And so dealing with it in the stream restoration aspects, and then we have what measures can be placed on sites, whether it be incorporated into a development to reduce flows or whether it can be like our parking lot at City Hall of using permeable pavers with a rock system that holds it back. That one holds a 100-year storm under the pavement to reduce flows to Iowa Creek. And then you also have the detention basins and the wetlands and those that Sarah and Dan have talked about.
Okay, we're going to take a break here for a minute or two, and then we'll be back to talk more about water quality issues.
Did you ever notice the old Big Dipper and wonder what he dips on that? Well, he's dipping out wisdom, he's dipping out love, he's dipping out a way of life. And if you notice the old Big Dipper, you're going to see all the other stars. And if you look around to where their light comes down, you're gonna see just where you are. You're gonna see you're on a little green speck, on a little blue ball, in a big black sky all alone. And we gotta take good care of that little blue ball, because you know it's the only home we'll ever own. Ever take a little wildflower and wonder why he smiles so bright? Well, he smiles because he's the bloom of love in a world that's made just right. And each little leaf of every wildflower, it's a work of art, you see. But if we mow them all down and tear up the ground, we ain't living like we ought to be. And we're living on a little green speck, on a little blue ball, in a big black sky all alone. Gotta take good care of that little blue ball, because you know it's the only home we'll ever own. Because he's made it through another winter, he's happy and he's feeling proud. And if we take good care of all the things we share, the forest, the water, and the sky, well, we can all be proud and we can shout out loud, and that peeper is telling you why. 'Cause we're living on a little green speck, on a little blue ball, in a big black sky all alone.
And that was a bit of Doug Woods with Little Blue Ball. And we're back with individuals that were talking about water quality, with Daniel Haig from Prairie Rivers of Iowa, Tracy Peterson from the City of Ames, engineer with the City of Ames, and Sarah Carmichael, the watershed coordinator for Story County. We were talking about the different methods. I think we're using an example down in the around the South Duff area and some of the natural oxbows, and to help slow down and hold some of that, retain some of that water before it goes down the channel to affect communities downstream from us. I wanted to add one area that I believe is really going to help people understand some of these techniques you're talking about, and that's the Tedesco Learning Center and all the work that has gone into that. And amazingly, it's been a cooperative effort between the City of Ames, Iowa State University, County Conservation, and am I missing somebody? It seems like there's, well, the Research Park folk all collaborated in that area to take care of what was really a degraded water channel in some regards, and has made it a great showpiece. And it demonstrate some of the things that we're talking about, including permeable surfaces on some of the trails have been used for that area. Sarah, could you talk a little bit about that? And I'll have Tracy and Dan weigh in on that as well.
Yeah, so this happened before I joined the county, but I do know it has just been such a successful partnership between the private, the city, the county, and the county does manage the land. And so we are out there with our volunteers, making sure the trees are watered and the grass is mowed. But we also create opportunities for artists to display some artwork out there. So it's just been a great restoration. There's lots of different types of restoration projects out there, and a great way for people to enjoy nature and walk the trails. Regarding monitoring, we actually are monitoring the kind of two drains that go into that creek that flow through to through that park, and we're also monitoring the site when it leaves the park. So it will take, you know, some time to see the benefits, but regarding monitoring, regarding water quality, but the benefits of having nature and the restoration projects are immediate.
Okay, Tracy?
That was an exciting project because it really helped us. I think the vision was, you know, really take a step back and what have we not done in our communities yet, and what can we, what can we do? And it was an open slate of really looking at that area, and it has residential flow and agricultural flow that comes through there. And as you said, it was really degraded. I mean, everything was really eroded and it was not a stable environment. That vision has been really incredible of that collaboration. And it's a wonderful amenity. It's the first county park in the city. And so there were things, you know, to talk about as far as that went, but it went very seamless. And it really did have this opportunity. If you have not been out there, I really highly recommend you go out and either ride your bike out to it or walk through there. It's warming up. We're going to have some warmer weather coming up. So it's a great opportunity to go out and enjoy nature out at that Tedesco Learning Corridor. And you'll see different ways that the stream was stabilized. And so that's some of what I was talking about earlier, is that there's different means to stabilize things in different ways. If you really observe the landscape, a lot of different ways you can use nature.
It's a great demonstration area for folks that wonder about some of the practices. Dan, I want to get your opinion on that, but we keep mentioning testing the water and what we're finding there. Can you just briefly tell our listeners what we are testing for, why, and what happens with that data?
Sure. One of the things that we test for at the lab is E. coli bacteria, and that's an indicator of fecal contamination. It can be from, you know, it could be from dogs, could be from raccoons, could be from livestock, could be from humans, you know, and DNR tests for that at some locations, but what we've seen is that the impaired waters list is really just kind of the tip of the iceberg, and that some of our streams like Iowa Creek and West Indian Creek in Nevada, Susquehanna River near Story City have much higher levels than, you know, what they've tested. So I think people should be aware of that, and, you know, always pack hand sanitizer if you're going to be recreating in the creek. I'd say what we have found, that there's lower E. coli levels at the South Skunk River in Ames, at most of our lakes, Ada Hayden, Hickory Grove, and Peterson Park have had lower E. coli levels lately. So that's one thing that we test for. We also test for nutrients. Of course, that's a big concern for our impact on the Gulf of Mexico, so nitrogen and phosphorus. So volunteers will be testing that for as well. We have a few different ways of looking at muddy water, so testing water clarity or the amount of sediment suspended in the water. And then we also do biological monitoring. So the insects in a river can be sort of like a canary in the coal mine. And so if you don't see mayflies and stoneflies, then that's an indication that something could be wrong.
Okay. We're going to have to wrap this up. But before we go, Tracy, I know that the city has a number of events coming up, and I think we'll visit with Susan and Liz about that. So you're off the hook on that. I want to ask Sarah. Sarah, are you aware of anything that the county is going to be doing for Earth Day this weekend, for example?
So I am will actually be tabling at the Ames Water Treatment Open House on Saturday.
Okay.
So I will be there representing the county.
I think there's also a conversation on how to talk about the environment and water quality and a variety of subjects, but that would be out at the McFarland Center. Dan, I know you've got some events coming up along with the water treatment plant. You've got a couple other, if you could just highlight those.
Yeah, if you want to get started with water quality testing, volunteer water quality monitoring, we do have our spring water quality snapshot on May 17. You can register on our webpage, prrcd.org. So we always have volunteers testing a lot of streams at different locations to get us a picture of kind of where are the hot spots. I think Liz will be talking about the trash cleanup coming up. And then there's our new pollinators specialist, Jessica Butters, will be giving a presentation at Ames Public Library for an eco chat that the City of Ames is hosting on April 28th.
Okay, so those are all coming up. I really appreciate you folks coming in and spending some time with us. We definitely could spend more time on this subject. Dan Haug of Prairie Rivers of Iowa, along with City Engineer Tracy Peterson and Sarah Carmichael, the Watershed Coordinator with Story County Conservation. Thank you, folks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
And I want to welcome Susan Guiasta this morning from the City of Ames. Susan, we've just had a lot of information flowing in this morning with water quality. And before we visit with Liz, do you have anything we need to let our listeners know?
Well, sure. Let's keep that stream going. Yeah. Lots of different things coming up. And the first one is tonight we do have a City Council workshop about stormwater. That's at 6 p.m. at City Council's City Council Chambers in City Hall. If you want to watch it on streaming, it's available on Facebook and YouTube. And then you can always watch it off our website at cityofames.org. Lots of other things going on. You mentioned Earth Day coming up on Friday, the water plant open house this Saturday. And in a few minutes, our guest stormwater analyst Liz Calhoun will talk about a cleanup at the end of the month as well. I just wanted to piggyback on your earlier guest regarding the Tedesco Learning Corridor. We each year have a bike ride. The mayor's bike ride this year is scheduled for May 21st. So that gives you a little bit of time to train, get your bike out, find your bike helmet. And we'll be biking down south in Ames this year. First time to go south down to the Tedesco Learning Corridor. So an opportunity to learn a little bit more about that beautiful park and get in a 6 to 10 mile bike ride. We're still working on the route.
Okay.
Trying to figure out which is the amount of miles that kids can get and parents can get, and it's safe. So we're still looking at that, but we do know that the new park will be one of our sites.
Well, I was wondering, are you going to have some traffic direction near the roundabout so folks don't take the wrong turn?
You know, we've had that discussion. Exactly. How do you cross a roundabout on a bike, and will people be able to sort of follow it? It's pretty clearly marked,
sure.
But I have to tell you, I don't cross them very often, and I think that it might take me a little bit of puzzling to get through it. So, well, yes, as we've had in past years, we'll have police escorts across busier intersections. It is a family-friendly bike ride. Again, Saturday, May 21st, so you have some time to get ready for that.
Great. That sounds like a good opportunity to get out, get some exercise, and also see one of our It's becoming a jewel in a rough that's getting polish on it as the time progresses, Pat.
Well, it's a research park area, and anytime you can incorporate cutting-edge research in water quality, you're probably onto something of real value. And that, so it's really a beautiful amenity for Ames community.
Definitely is. And again, there are so many little examples of things that are going on, some cutting-edge designs that people can look at and see how it works and understand what Tracy's trying to do, and Sarah and Dan and Liz, for example, Liz Calhoun. So, Susan, I'm going to just segue over to Liz, if that's all right.
That sounds great.
Okay, good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
Well, we've got an event coming up that you're going to fill us in on. Give us a little bit of background on what's going on, please.
Yeah, this the end of this month, on April 30th, we have a trash cleanup on the Iowa Creek in Central Ames. This segment will be starting at Brookside Park at 6th Street Bridge and go down to the South Grand Avenue Bridge and potentially even farther, depending on how long it takes us to get there. We had started this stretch of the stream last fall, and we didn't quite get done with it, so we're going to try to wrap it up and get this central part of the creek all cleaned up.
Now, if there are folks that are interested in helping, but they are a little bit reluctant to get their feet wet, can they still work along the banks?
Yes, actually, that's a good question, because last year when we did it, the water was lower and warmer, so we waited. Now this year the water's up a little bit, and we are planning to use some canoes. Mm-hmm. So that's one way that they can stay dry and also stay on the banks and walk along. Part of this stretch has a path along it, so can access from the path and come up and down into the channel. And yeah, we're hoping that the water warms up just a tad, so those of us that do want to wade won't get too cold. But yeah, we're gonna try to get out there and one way or the other get that cleaned up.
That sounds great. Now, in the past, you've had some, gosh, record-setting amounts of material that have been taken out of some of our waterways that for years were treated as just another way to get rid of unwanted material, in other words, trash. Not only that, but our storm sewers, some of those materials get down into the storm sewer system, and that's where it ends up, in our streams. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, exactly. It all starts up above the streams, and eventually, yeah, most of the trash makes its way down either through the storm sewers or just as wind blown until it settles into a low spot. And we typically see at the stormwater outfalls, we see a big collection area there where we can focus on getting that cleaned up. And yeah, it's pretty amazing how fast the trash comes back too. We're potentially, if we have time, we'll extend this cleanup down through the stretch that we actually cleaned up last fall, because the reports that we have from the scouts are saying there's already some trash back in that area. So we'll just try to stay on top of it and keep it cleaned out.
Yeah, just because you're having this day doesn't mean that if you're using that area or floating down the river, take a couple of containers with you to pick that up to alleviate some of that. Now, I know there are some items that end up in stream banks that are a little tougher than just the, you know, the recreational paddler or whatever can handle, but we can all do our part every day as we're using these areas.
Yeah, exactly. Just walking around your neighborhood or just when you're out and about, you see some trash, it's easy enough to pick up. There's places downtown and campus town that have trash cans. You don't even have to carry it very far. You can just pick it up and put it right in a trash can and dispose of it, keep our city clean, and be proud of the cleanliness of Ames.
Now, on this particular day, is there going to be a receptacle, or are you going to have places where these are sub-stored and then somebody will come along and pick those up? How does that work?
Yeah, we'll have like a staging process. We'll have some drop-off points along the way as we go, and then we'll have a pickup. We'll probably use a pickup truck to collect it there and then take it over to Ryman Gardens. We'll have a big dumpster over at Ryman Gardens. This cleanup is actually part of this overall citywide Stash the Trash event for that weekend.
Okay.
So if people don't want to come in the stream, they can take part in the Stash the Trash and just go around and pick up trash. And we do have bags and gloves available, both at Resource Recovery Plant and also here at the lobby of City Hall. Yeah, for those people that maybe don't want to spend the whole 4 hours out doing it, but just want to take an hour or two anytime that weekend, the weekend of the 30th and May 1st, they can just do it more flexible and do it on their own schedule.
Sounds great. So for those folks that maybe don't want to get in the organized part, take a container or something with you if you're going to go look for those spring ephemerals in our green spaces, and they can all contribute, that's for sure. Anything else you want to add to that, Liz?
Just people want to sign up for the cleanup. We do have a registration, so they can go to the Prairie Rivers website. We're doing some great collaboration with Prairie Rivers and the Story County and Outdoor Alliance. Iowa State is involved.
Mm-hmm.
So our sign up is on the Prairie Rivers website under the events tab. So go ahead and sign up. We're hoping to have the sign up closed by next Monday so we can lock in our numbers. And feel free to sign up. And they can also call me or email me, liz.calhoun@cityofames.org, if there are any questions.
Okay. Yeah, we'll have all that on our website for sure, so people can refer to that if needed. Best of luck, and I know most of us are going to be out there because it's going to be a great spring day. We're all going to be wanting to be outside, but we want to pick up and contribute to the beautification of our area. Thanks, Liz.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Susan.
Yeah, and again, just a reminder, learn more about sustainability and sustainability-related programs this Saturday at our Earth Day on the Airways, our collaborative partnership with KHOI. We're so appreciative of your willingness to do that again this year and let us share our messages about sustainability on Saturday from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
We're looking forward to it and planning as we talk. Pat's over here writing furiously. So, thanks again. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you.
It was just after dark when the truck started down the hill that leads into Scranton, Pennsylvania, carrying 30,000 pounds. About the warm breath woman who was waiting at the journey's end. He started down the 2 mile drop, the curving road that wound from the top of the hill. He was pushing on through the shortening miles that ran down to the depot. Just a few more miles to go, then he'd go home and have her ease. His lung cramped the day away and the smell of 30,000 pounds.
Yeah, we're getting closer to the bottom of that hill, folks, but we've got to keep an uplift in our spirit. So Anna Magnuson, Anna Banana, is joining us. Good morning.
And I'm joining you. Why? Well, because it's Tune In Tuesday. As you know, with Anna Banana, as I try and tempt you to listen to KHOI today. So, Mike Metz, let's kick this off, shall we? So what did the lawyer name his daughter? Do you know?
I don't know. Impeachment?
Well, that's a good one. That's an interesting name. Come over here,
Peach.
Impeachment. You're grounded.
You're Peach. You're
so,
a nope. Peach, yeah.
You're a Peach. Nope, that's not it. What did the lawyer name his daughter? Sue. Now, neither one of our KHOI hosts that I know are named Sue. But we do know the dynamic duo, and their names are Donna and Lana, who host the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. Now, for today's show, this Tuesday, Neil Hamilton is their guest. He is a professor emeritus of law and spent 38 years as the director of the Drake University Agricultural Law Center. His new book is called The Land Remains, A Midwestern Perspective on Our Past and Future. So Donna and Lana will discuss Hamilton's perspective on land use, agriculture, food policy, and the history of human impact on the environment. Sounds interesting. So what is this Donna Lana Kitchen? For those of you who don't know, well, the Donna Lana Kitchen, they talk about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Chef Donna and Farmer Lana explore the local food scene with a lively discussion and good humor on Tuesdays at noon and repeated at 7 p.m. Will you be listening, Mike?
I believe I will be listening at the lunch hour today.
Yes, and we know at the lunch hour, too, that Mike Murphy also will be there because he helps engineer that show. Now, speaking of laws and connected to their guest, Neil Hamilton, Mike Metz, do you know what one of the Murphy's laws known as the Will and Guy's Law is? Does that question make sense to you?
No, but
Murphy, one of Murphy's Law.
Murphy's Law is it's just whatever, you know, whatever you plan, it's you might as well just throw it out the window, especially when you're trying to answer a riddle or something with Anna, because it never works.
No, that's right. Well, this Murphy's Law known as Will and Guy's Law is this. If you don't save things on your computer, you will, sooner than later, delete them. Now, I know that this might be something that you and Sam Wormley might discuss as the two superhero hosts of Science Bites. I know that Sam Wormley has talked to me not only about saving my files on my computer, but several little scoldings about passwords, but I won't talk about that. But maybe you guys are talking about that on Science Bites.
Well, I see that your password manager is slipping out of the closet in the form of Floyd there. What's going on? No, seriously. Because it's Earth Week, we are going to rebroadcast our visit with Irv Kloss on Rachel Carson's Silent Spring and the DDT measures that were taken and what the results were and where we are today essentially because of that.
So do you remember when you first read Silent Spring?
I do.
High school?
It was high school. I was a junior in high school when I read that, but it really didn't sink into me until I was a freshman in college, along with reading Aldo Leopold and some of those other things. But yeah, in high school we had, I was a junior on the first Earth Day and was the vice president of our ecology club.
And, oh, I like that voice.
Yeah, and Pat.
Mike, I'd like to point out that Dr. Irv Kloss was the co-op leader of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service co-op extension at Iowa State University.
Yes.
Emeritus now. But his work with DDT was monumental that era. A lot of people overlooked that Dr. Irv Kloss is a giant when it comes to the topic of DDT.
He actually was one of the first to measure eggshell thickness when it came to DDT. And that was part of what the whole problem was with the demise of the birds like peregrine falcon and some of those. So we'll hear about that, yes. Yeah, Irv is definitely one of the big oaks of our environmental movement.
Yeah, so I think that you could come up with a book club on science fights to talk about Rachel Carson's book and maybe some others as well. So that's just a little suggestion. I know. So I am a scientist, and so I would suggest that we learn about science fights and all that has been discussed so that we are smarter about what is going on in the world of science. Now, another Murphy's Law of computing is that when you get to the point where you really understand your computer, it's probably obsolete. But none of my jokes are ever obsolete, and science fights will always be a timeless classic. And speaking of time, when can one listen to science fights?
Well, do you want that international time, military time, or just our regular time?
You get to choose.
Okay. Tuesdays at 4:30 and rebroadcast again on Saturday at 10:30 following a program that you are somewhat involved in every other week.
Inside of the Mind with Julie Saxton. So be sure to listen to that this weekend. And then next weekend is I Am Able Iowa. But lots of reasons to listen to KHOY.
Is Mike. Let me just jump in here because there will not be any Inside of the Mind this weekend, will there be a rebroadcast of Science Bites because we are doing an all-day Earth Day on the airwaves. Starting at 8 a.m., we're going to be featuring audio from the very first Earth Day. And featuring folks like Pete Seeger and Allen Ginsberg. And then throughout the day, we'll be partnering with the city. And we've got lots of other great programming happening on Saturday. So I hope everyone can tune in for that.
Isn't that smooth how he did that? And we're all involved, and I forgot.
No, we didn't forget. We were testing.
Oh, there we go.
The listener to see if they were paying attention to this whole entire program. But
you had your science hat on and you were testing.
That's right. That's what we're all about, experimentation. Now, after listening to Science Bites today, you can later tune in at 8:30 p.m. You see, I got distracted because I didn't write. So after listening to Science Bites today on Tuesday, you can later tune in at 8:30 p.m. to listen to the Heart to Heart Messages show. And that hour, we will spend time with the award-winning artist, Akwi Nunji, and get an update about her story. So last year, about the fabulous Akwi. She specializes in creative personal narrative storytelling across artistic mediums. Her work and words have appeared on stage from California's Wine Country to New York's Fashion Week. She is owner of Threshold Gallery, an artist-run gallery and micro venue with a mission to support women artists and artists of color in the Midwest. Now, Akwi has also served as an arts ambassador in multiple roles, including as founding executive director of The Hook, an Iowa Arts Council board member, producer of nearly 100 events in recent years involving more than 300 writers and performers, and advisor of the Arts Midwest Initiative. So that's interesting, but guess what else? He was born in Iowa City and raised in Cameroon, Africa. And as the host of Heart to Heart Messages, I found and love this description of her home country. Cameroon is Africa's throbbing heart, a sultry mosaic of active volcanoes, white sand beaches, thick rainforests, and magnificent parched landscapes broken up by the bizarre rock formations of the Sahel. With 250 local languages, the country is a vast ethnic and linguistic jigsaw, yet one that, in contrast to so many of its neighbors, enjoys a great deal of stability. Now, last time, Akwi talked about her memories of Cameroon as a child. And recently, she returned to Cameroon for her father's funeral. And she's going to talk about place and home and how that experience of returning to Cameroon has shaped how she thinks about the world.
Okay, that sounds like something we really need to tune in to.
Yeah, she's absolutely fabulous. I'm inspired by this woman who is right here in Iowa to talk about her story. So now, after listening to Heart Messages, I'm going to go back to Mike Murphy. Thank you for reminding us about Earth Day programming. But according to Murphy's Laws, do you know what he says about all the desirable things in life?
All the desirable things in life are you can have everything you want if you don't want anything.
Oh, that's a good one. But according to Murphy's Law that I researched on Google, all the desirable things in life are either illegal, expensive, or fattening. Well, this is not the case, because if you tune into KHOI, a desirable listening experience is not illegal, it's not expensive, and it's not fattening. And what is an example of this? Well, on the next KHOI Jukebox with Eric B., our number one will be a busy one. First, a man holds many titles, longtime friend from way back in high school, the man who is totally responsible for getting Eric into radio, and someone he now calls Mr. Hollywood. He had a part in Halloween Kills. Mike Dupree will be with Eric to discuss the passing of his good friend, Bobby Rydell. Now, also in hour number one, once again, he'll be playing a group of songs that will have something in common. What will your guess be? As we continue on into hour number two, he'll be playing the music that was on a huge hit with your music idol, and the sound was loud, covered, and plenty of hair. So you can join Eric B. Now, Mike Murphy.
Yes.
Here's another office law. When you try to prove something that a machine won't work, it will. But we can always prove that the machine will work by listening to You Name It This Thursday. What's happening on You Name It This Thursday from 2 to 4?
Well, we're celebrating Earth Day with great music for the planet.
Makes sense. All right. So, Pat, the degree of close encounters is the probability of meeting someone you know increases dramatically when you are with someone you don't want to be seen with. So you don't have to worry about meeting someone or counting someone that you don't want to be seen with if you have something cool to talk about. And how do you come up with something cool to talk about? You tune in to KHOY. Now, to close out the Tune In Tuesday heart-to-heart messages with a wink and a nod to the Donna Lotta Kitchen Show, what do dinosaurs and decent lawyers have in common, Pat? I'll tell you what, they're both extinct. And speaking of extinction, my time is up. So thank you, Local Talk Team, for keeping us informed and engaged in our community. And I'm passing it back to you to close out our hour together.
Thanks, Anna. As part of Wednesday's Local Talk, we're going to hear Susan Franson. She'll be visiting with Story County's Leanne Harmer, and then she will be heading to Boone to visit their library there. I want to thank Mike Murphy for engineering this morning's Local Talk, and to producer Lynn Carey for all her assistance, as well as Pat Schlerbaum and Anna Magnuson. You also heard from Dan Haug of Prairie Rivers, Ames engineer Tracy Peterson, Sarah Carmichael, the watershed coordinator of Story County, and Susan Guiazda, and you also heard from Liz Calhoun.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI, your community nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Remember that you can also hear this broadcast online at khoifm.org and find the links to our guests and information you heard during this program.
Yep, you can also go to that website and make a donation and support KHOI. But now stay tuned for Democracy Now!, followed by All Things Piano at 9 a.m. Our theme song, as always, is Fact-Checking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And
see you again
on the radio. On the radio.
This is KHOI, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area.